It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. You're on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, with some institutional knowledge of a young activist that got older. And I was just looking for the truth. I didn't want to, you know, I thought I was going to change something, trying to work on the inside or anything. I was a Republican, Ronald Reagan kind of guy. And I just went independent, you know, in the late 80s and just said, look, man, I want to take a step back and check and see what's what. Well, I came across a lot of stuff. You start pulling threads, man, you find out stuff. Well, now we have this Article 5 Amendments Convention. They're not calling it a constitutional convention. It's an amendments convention to the Constitution. So they just want to call it something else. It's a constitutional, it's a con. Well, they, you know, play games, but it's the same people. The contract with America, contract on America, depending on who you ask, that was done by, you know, it's a bold new plan by Representative Newt Gingrich and Representative Dick Armey. Well, these guys are right back at it. You know, Newt Gingrich is, you know, raising his head in this thing. Dick Armey was behind the, you know, the Tea Party Express and all that kind of stuff. In fact, he was supposed to be a speaker in Searchlight, and they kind of pulled him off. They said, yeah, it's getting too obvious here. Look, got to pull him off the marquee there. But I could see what was coming. It's just a redux of the same thing. You go through about... Oh, it's about three presidential terms. It's about 15 years. You know, you'll have, it'll be Goldwater in 64. Then you'll go, it'll be, what was the next big thing? You got the Ronald Reagan comes in, you know, the Reagan Revolution. You know, that's like 15 years later. It's a contract with America. You know, Ross Perot and all that kind of stuff. Then you go another 15 years or so, three election cycles for president or more, and you all of a sudden, boom, here comes a Ron Paul revolution. And just like they did with the Ross Perot thing of 92, 2 years later, they came up with the contract with America. And it was a 10 pinky swears with the American people. If you put us in charge again, we will do these things. And we were going to eliminate this and eliminate that and so on, Department of Education. We're going to cut the taxes here. We're going to do all kinds of stuff. None of it got done. None. One thing they did do is I remember they were going to, you know, eliminate government. Well, there was one thing that they eliminated. It was a $135,000 tea inspector out of New York or something. And, of course, I'm sure he got a job somewhere else in the government. But, you know, just so they could say they did. I mean, it was just, it's comical. But, you know, back then, if you didn't hear it on the nightly news, you didn't know about it. Heck, now most people don't know about it. They just do whatever Fox News says or the evening news or something. They don't know. They actually have to go read something, you know, watch some YouTubes. But that's all the next generation does. People under 30, they don't do anything else but. They're not watching television. You know, what we had just a few weeks ago, Nielsen ratings had the evening news of all the networks at the lowest since the beginning of ratings. 50-plus years. The lowest in audience. You know, even Fox News, they try and make out that they're the big woo-hoo, and at most, they're, I don't know, it was, I heard 4 million, you know, say it's double. Let's say it's 10 million people. 10 million. Man, that's a good week. There's war started somewhere. 10 million people, and out of 300 million, and that's what drives the country. After the Ron Paul Revolution demonstrated itself in the 08 presidential election cycle. Well, it's midterm elections. Here we go. Same thing. Newt Gingrich, Dick Armey, same crowd. Same people, same. Karl Rove, you know, and the Republican Party, GOP. Now we have, here in Arizona, we'll go ahead and finish with Stephen Molyneux's YouTube here. And without the graphics, you don't get as much out of it, but it's on today's archive for today's show. You go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see today's show for September 20th, afternoon show, 2010. You go into that archive, and you'll see the link, and you can just watch it. It's very informative. But, you know, there's really something changed, especially for the people that have, you know, linked the GOP, the Republicans, with God, and Christianity in particular. Because there's a big disconnect, you know, that's going on throughout the culture, because that comes with a whole bunch of moral standards that are being forced upon people, being imposed by a shiny badge. And I bring this up because this weekend I was out and about, and I stopped by one of my favorite places. It's called Uncle Sam's, and it's just a pizza place with, they make good Philly cheesesteaks. So I went in there to get one. And he had the New Times, which is like a weekly publication going around. And usually it's like a newspaper kind of tabloid thing, but they got a shiny front page on this one, and it's all pink, and it's got a rainbow GOP elephant on the front. And it says, over the rainbow, the namesake son of conservative Mormon Matt Salmon wants to make a name for himself in Republican politics, too. Only he's gay. Well, you know, not that I care, but I know Matt Salmon. He was a Republican congressman. He ran for governor here in 2002 and lost, and to Jan Napolitano, no less. And the reason he lost is he weenied out on Second Amendment stuff right when it counted, and it really cost him. And, he's blaming the libertarian and everything, but it was his own fault. But what happened was it comes out that his son, Matt, you know, wants to be a politician, you know, Matt Jr., and he's gay. So how do you do that? You got to open up the Republican Party to gate him. Is that going to be allowed? You know, is there people that go, no. Yeah, Dick Cheney's daughter was lesbian. You know, Dick Cheney's wife, you know, wrote a book. We had all kinds of fun with that. In her book, it was called, I don't know, Sisters or something, and it had kind of, you know, some weird stuff in there. So, you know, it's they're just so much facade, lying, deception, garbage. Well, the American people, you know, are they going to rise up against the two parties? Are they going to continue to vote? Are they going to continue to participate? Well, to get them to do so, they're going to have to incorporate a much wider swath of demographics. And is it what somebody's love life like? Is that the role of government to determine your love life, your bedroom, and how you, what, seriously? Is that the founders had anything to do with? You can go on about how it was, you know, based on Judeo-Christian. Just the fact that you even say the word Judeo-Christian. Now, that was manufactured. That was brought. I thought the new and the old were separate, and then you kind of combined them somehow because it served somebody's interest. I mean, it's just, I'm so tired of being manipulated. I just want to know the truth. And the truth is, they're coming after me as a resource, as livestock. Well, that's what Stephen Molyneux is trying to point out, and I'm going to let him continue here.
They are managed. They are never given the choice to shut down the farm and be truly free. Government schools are indoctrination pens for livestock. They train children to, quote, love the farm and to fear true freedom and independence, and to attack anyone who questions the brutal reality of human ownership. Furthermore, they create jobs for the intellectuals that state propaganda so relies on. The ridiculous contradictions of statism, like religion, can only be sustained through endless propaganda inflicted upon helpless children. The idea that democracy and some sort of social contract justifies the brutal exercise of violent power over billions is patently ridiculous. If you say to a slave that his ancestors, quote, chose slavery, and therefore he is bound by their decisions, he will simply say, if slavery is a choice, then I choose not to be a slave.
Think about that. You know, they're saying, well, you're the founders, the Constitution, the social contract, the this, the that, they chose this for you, did they? Okay, well, I say, I choose not. Are you allowed to say no? You know, it really doesn't matter. That's why I always say, if I don't get the choice of saying none, then it's not really a choice. I'm not allowed to say none. That right there tells you how bad they are. You're not allowed to choose nobody ruling you.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs, chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering as the youth are young. So ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on, I don't know. What's the truth, y'all? Come on, I don't know. What's the love, y'all?
Forgiven people dying, children hurt, and crying. Can you practice what you preach? And would you turn the other cheek? Father, 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 help us.
It's right here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. You know, that's one thing is it's a very simple question. You know, where is the love? If you're using religion and the government force to impose things on people that really doesn't, it's not bothering you. Why are we having so much force and death and damnation on people that, you know, am I allowed not to care? I just don't care. I don't care what people do on that. I don't care what they do across town. I don't care what they do across the country. I don't care what they do in the next state or the next city or the next country across the continent. Am I allowed not to care? I mean, why do I have to care? I got enough to worry about raising my own family, worrying about my own economics, worrying about my, this is a sickness. You watch the evening news, and it's all about the money they're spending in your name to make other people do something that you don't even know who they are. You don't have any interaction with them. You don't get, somehow there's some kind of a moral authority that they've given themselves in your name. Of course, they need your money to do it, and they're going to go impose their will on somebody. Are you allowed to say, I just want to be free? I want to be left alone. There are those that just want to be left alone and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? What are you advocating for? You know, I give speeches a lot. I go to a lot of places and it's always, yeah, but don't you think, before you even finish, no, I don't think about whatever it is that you want me to think about. I mean, is it something that, you're going to want me to think that I should impose my will or allow somebody else to impose theirs on me? I'm going to say no. I mean, is there some speech, some advocacy you want to make? I mean, you're going to convince me that I'm supposed to use the force of government, the unlimited resources of the man to do what? Why? What is your reasoning? Well, they'll come up with all kinds of stuff, but it never is supported by a proper law of government to defend individual rights. I mean, if it's something that you want to have government do to go and capture someone, punish them, get your stuff back that they took from you, you know, something like that for somebody aggressed against me or mine, I'm going, okay, I'm hip to that. I'm with you, brother. Is that what you're talking about? No, it never is. And when they want to redo the guy, yeah, it's broke. It's really broke. It's so broke. We broke it bad. Big time broken. Yeah, we're in debt. And all, yeah, they never talk. They want, we need a balanced budget amendment. You know what that means? More taxes. You think they're going to, you know what we're going to do? All the people that did this, all the people in control, the people that were congressmen, people that had their contract on us before, all those people, give us the power. We'll go and we'll fix it. And I guarantee you one thing they're not going to do. They're not going to reduce their power. They're not going to reduce their income. They're not going to reduce their scope of influence to do what they want for their buddies. They're going to enslave you even more. Oh, and we're supposed to feel good about this. And they'll do whatever they can to try and make us feel good about it. Yeah. Let's see what Stefan has to say. We'll go ahead and finish it off this segment.
This is the most frightening statement for the ruling classes, which is why they train their slaves to attack anyone who dares speak it. Statism is not a philosophy. Statism does not originate from historical evidence or rational principles. Statism is an ex post facto justification for human ownership.
And that's really what it comes down to. Can we evolve? Can humanity march on? March on to where? I don't know. They go, well, Ernie, what would happen if it? I don't know. Am I supposed to care? I don't care what other people do with their freedom. You know, libertarianism is a means, you know, not the goal. The goal is left up to the individual. Libertarianism is that you cannot use force. You cannot initiate force or fraud for social, political, economic, or social gain. That's the whole prime directive of libertarianism. In fact, to be a card-carrying member of the National Libertarian Party, you got to take that oath. They go, hey, I do not advocate the initiation of force or fraud for political, social, or economic gain. Okay? Well, a lot of people, and they want to do away with that oath in the Libertarian Party, man. They're just beating the table. Guy, get away. It makes it too small. There's more people would join us if you would take away the limitation on them to initiate force against people. That was kind of the point. That was the reason why it was there, was to eliminate the advocacy of force, because that means no taxation without consent. You know, if you want to come to me and say, you know what, we're going to, let's think of something, maybe a gasoline tax for the roads. You're not going to get me to, you know, advocate for that. I'm not going to follow my sword or whatever. If I really had a free society, I'd just buy petrol from somebody else. And, you know, I'm not going to do it there. It's probably more inconvenient, but maybe I can save it. I'll do black market gasoline. Oh, but then you have a black market. You know, then you have, it's like, you don't think so? They do it with cigarettes. You know, why are people, you know, if you wrap it in a brown wrapper, well, then it's cigar designation, and it has a lower tax rate. You go get it at the Indian reservations, you pay less. You do it on the internet, you pay less. You do it, you know, they're going to make it to where, no, you're not allowed to get around the law. That's all about getting how much money they can get from you. That's why in one of the rejoiners we have roads. It's Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads. Because I always hear that. But what about the roads? I'm like, yeah, what about, let's talk about the roads. What about the roads? I can give you 15 gazillion stories, certainly here in Arizona, about how they will build these developments out in the middle of the desert, and then all these people move out there, and they're freaked out because it takes them 2 hours to get to work in central Phoenix, 40 miles away. We got to build a highway out here. Okay, with tax money from whom? You know, you build these developments out in the middle of the desert, you got to have sewer systems, sidewalks, lights, infrastructure. Well, they do that with a lot of the development from the city They make this investment, and they charge property taxes on the people that have paid for their property taxes and roads and sewage and improvements probably 20, 30 years ago, and the circumference of the valley keeps getting bigger, and they got to pay for all this. Why? Because they can. Because developers come in and they say, we need to have this. Oh, and here come the roads. We got to have these roads. I go, you know, no. Let the developers take care of the roads. Let it, you know, let them, you know, sit 5 hours in rush hour traffic. You know, why am I paying for them wanting to live out there because they got cheap land that only the developers could get in big lump sums from the government as they dole it out because they paid off a legislator to get it? I mean, you know, I just see, let it go. Let the free market do it. Oh, my goodness, we might use the three-dimensional space of the air. You know, where's my George Jetson car? Government took it away from me because they're making me pay for roads that my kids got to pay for, too. They may be obsolete.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
I'm back in the saddle again here and declare your independence. We're trying to just, share the option of being able to free yourself in your own mind. It's a revolution between the ears. And that's one thing that John Adams, he went on, you know, he wasn't one of the more perfect guys. But he did recognize that the revolution really started a decade before the shot heard around the world. You know, people were really starting to understand these things. They're reading a lot. You had Thomas Paine's Common Sense. I mean, he's saying, look, let me tell you what this is all about. You know, let me tell you why this is so important, why we're going to be. That was something that was printed by the gazillions and hundreds of thousands, and it just went through all the troops and so on during the Revolutionary War. George Washington made sure a lot of the guys got it. And Thomas Paine, they wanted to travel him around and speak to different cities. No, I'm going to go in with the troops. I'm going to go with Washington. I'm going to go hang out with them. He really just kind of, you know, I'm just going to, you know, be the conscience of. I'm just going to hang out and kind of learn what's really going on, what the people are thinking and so on, and try and put it into words so that we can all understand what this really is about. It's not for creating government for another aristocracy. You know, it's for us. It's like in the movie Braveheart with Mel Gibson. He goes, well, if this is your army, why does it flee? Well, we didn't come to fight for them so they could have more land and tax us and, you know, we'd be their serfs. We came to fight the British, Longshanks. We wanted to be free from them, not to just to change masters. We can go fight and die, you know, for these guys so they can be our rulers. He goes, ah, good. That's why I'm here. Let's go kick butt. You know, just that concept. You know, that's a powerful concept. Are you fighting for freedom to be ruled by your state legislators? You know, give, you know, the states more power? That's what this whole thing is about. This Article 5 convention, you know, this Article 5 amendments convention to the Constitution, this constitutional convention, that's what it's all about, is we need to give more power to somebody else. Does that mean that the federal government's going to be diminished in some way? Heck no. What are you going to do? You know, dole out the F-16s to the states? I mean, that they're going to have under their control? The governor's going to be able to order up the state guard to do whatever? Maybe Texas. They might try. So I'm not comfortable with this because I think it's going down the wrong path. I think they're starting to just make my point all over again that it's about who gets to ring a power. It's never about the elimination of the ring. They create, you know, it's one thing, the beginning of Lord of the Rings, it was an interesting clip to where they go, well, they created so many rings for the dwarves and so many for the elves and so many for men, but Sauron, you know, the Prince of Darkness, the evil power, he created one ring to bind them all, one ring to rule them and in the darkness bind them. That's what's coming. And that's what Tolkien was warning of, is there's always going to be this effort to create rings of power. It's the power that's the problem. And they'll always consolidate them in ever larger batches of power. Well, here comes the United Nations. I'm not comfortable with this at all. And what am I supposed to advocate for? I'm trying to instill with experience and with the contacts and people I've met, and this next generation's really given me an insight into what's coming. You're not going to have as many. I don't know if it's going to be a significant number or what, but if Facebook or peer-to-peer communications have anything to do with it, which is why they got to go after the internet, is you're going to have people sharing these kinds of ideas amongst themselves and become an entire generation. Just in the last few years, let's imagine this. You're a sophomore, junior in college, you know, or even high school. And so you're a teenager. You know, let's say you're 18. You're right of voting age. And you're 17, 18. You're going to be a voting age in 2008. You're starting to pay attention. You're starting to get exposure to all these new concepts. I don't know. Did your younger siblings, you know, rub off on them a little bit? Your parents get a little bit of it? Grandparents? So one thing Dr. Paul was saying, he was saying a lot of the people that came to him, older ones, they were brought by their kids or their grandkids. They're the ones that got them interested. They're the ones that got them to look. They're the ones that unplugged them. Now we're going into an older generation. They're getting out of college. They got their sheepskin diploma, and they're what? They don't have a job. So are they looking to fix what did it to them or abandon the system that gave the bad guys the capacity to do it? There's enough. There's enough that this concept will not die. It will not go away. Will it be the prevailing opinion? Will it be consensus reality, as my friend often says? I started to understand what was going on. If they can get a consensus reality, the prevailing opinion. I remember I used to hear that a lot in the 70s when I was in grade school, junior high. It was, the prevailing opinion, how did it prevail? Who said it prevailed? And why is it prevailing opinion the right opinion? Well, what's that based on? Where did it come from? So with this kind of stuff in mind, you can look at, you know, things like in the news today. Afghanistan's elections didn't go off very well. You know, their election success, you know, was just filled with violence and fraud and low voter turnout. Officials were trumpeting Saturday's parliamentary election in Afghanistan as a resounding success, with General David Petraeus insisting it sent a powerful message to the insurgency and other NATO officials maintaining that violence wasn't nearly as bad as expected. But the reality on the ground was at least 18 deaths, widespread fraud and intimidation, and security problems, which kept roughly 20% of the country unable to vote at all. Voter turnout was expected to be robust, with a pre-vote poll showing a bizarre split between cynicism about the massive corruption, and yet that 70% of Afghans planned on voting. The reality was that they didn't, not even close. Official turnout figures from IEC said 40% of eligible voters cast ballots. But this was revealed to be a fudged estimate based on an artificially reduced eligibility number. In reality, only 3.6 million votes were cast, and over 16 million registered voters in the nation. And of course, 3.6 million votes in Afghanistan doesn't mean 3.6 million voters, as fake voting cards were openly sold in bazaars, and ballot stuffing was reported at multiple sites. Between these and the reports of bribery and coercion, reports of violence, and ballots running out, the results of the election seem to be exactly what the polls suggested, an unfair vote. And it doesn't really matter either in Afghanistan. It's just something that they're trying to create a facade so that they can have a consolidation of a country into one big farm. Because the Afghans are, it's hard to even call them Afghans because they're different tribes. It's kind of like Saudi Arabia, the Middle East was. The Middle East was just carved up by map makers in England and France, and they just, after World War One, they just kind of carved it up, and after Lawrence of Arabia, and said, here, this sheikh is in charge of this, and this guy gets that, and this guy, no, by the way, sign here, contract, we get your oil. I mean, that's all it was about. Well, the same thing with the resources of Afghanistan. Well, we don't have enough resources here. All you got to do is just free it up. Say, just get out of the way and let the people make use of the resources. But is that really the goal? That's not the goal. Control is. And you got to have a national identity. You got to have a national soccer team. You got to have a national government that gets voted on or something to be able to say you're an Afghan and do whatever with them. What if the people don't even think that way? Doesn't matter. They're going to try and force it on them anyway. It's a little bit different now with the internet and telecommunications and phones and so on. Be careful what happens. All these tribesmen out in the middle of the hinterland, all of a sudden they start able to communicate with the rest of the planet. What will happen? I don't know. Freedom always happens. More information means better ability to say no if you know what you're saying no to. There's a future. You know, there's so much more coming. You know, there's right now we have, you know, we had it up on Freedom's Phoenix. Let me see if I can find it. On Freedom's Phoenix, we had Boeing is now starting to offer space tourism. They got extra space on, you know, they're creating a space vehicle to supply the International Space Station. They go, well, heck, we might as well, we can sell the seats. There's guys with money. They can go to space. We can pay for the fuel. Hey, your cargo, man, pay. So, you know, that's coming, you know, space travels. I just know that the government's going to try and control it. They're just going to try and do everything they can to stop it. Because they can. It's not in their best interest for us to be able to flee. Even the space. We'll talk about more in the final segment when we come back. I'll give you some of the new technology and such that's coming out here of late and see just how free we can be. If we just allowed to be. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Open up your mind and let me step inside. Rest your weary head and let your heart decide. It's so
just watch Fox News, it's so easy. Yeah, all you have to do. Yeah, with Sarah Palin or whoever. This whole thing is just about just relax. We'll tell you, we'll implant what we want you to think about whatever it is that we want to do. And talk radio is a very powerful medium because it's you're just listening. You know, you're not thinking about what to say. You may be jotting down notes or sending me an email or calling me on the line or whatever. But generally, you're just open up to, you're driving around, especially in a podcast. You know, we have a lot of people that download the show and they listen to it from the archives at libertynewsradio.com. And you can get it there or you can get it on Freedom's Phoenix for the shows. And they download, subscribe to it, and they're listening, and they're just, you know, being inputted. Well, that's a very powerful medium. And it's a great responsibility. I don't want to be abusive of telling you something that's not going to be the truth a year from now, a decade from now. My grandkids going back, yeah, Grandpa had it going on. He saw what was coming. Do you? I'll give you just some of the technological stuff that's just on Freedom's Phoenix front page today. James Cameron, the guy that did Avatar, you know, and Titanic and all these other big blockbusters, is heading for the Mariana Trench to film Avatar sequel and capture X Prize simultaneously. Avatar is going to be on the sequel is going to be on the oceans of Pandora. You know, they're going to go underwater. Well, he's going to go down deep, 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 50th anniversary of the Trieste dive, which is, I guess it's the lowest part, you know, the deepest part of the ocean, the Mariana Trench. That it's a $10 million reward for, award, for the first privately funded sub to make two repeat manned descents to Challenger Deep. They go down there, boom, $10 million. Okay, I'll get that. I'll get me some 3D footage in the process. Get the cameras, go down there, and get what for. And he already had this plan. That's why James Cameron was going to, when they had the Deep Horizon with the oil spill, he's going, look, man, I'll just go down there and look. Heck, I give you a 3D film. We'll go down there and give what for. And they go, nin. Yeah, and then, you know, they kind of worked out a deal. But the thing is that, yep, they're going down. What happens when we start to make use of this enormous ocean that's available to us? I don't know. Are we allowed to be free? Is the ocean going to become its own country ruled over by somebody? Are we allowed to go down there and just be left alone? Heck no. Heck, we can't even leave the planet, much less go under it. So I'm just going, okay, you know, so this is going to be interesting. What comes of that? Now we have Boeing. Boeing wins to build the Vulture, right? It's the name of the solar spy plane that can stay aloft for 5 years. 5 years. 5-year mission to explore, I don't know, your house. Because it's going to be a spy plane. Yep. As the winner of DARPA's Vulture 2 program, the plane really only has to fly for 1 to 3 months by 2014. I mean, that's all they really wanted for it, but it can go up and stay up there for years. I mean, it charges itself, you know, and then overnight it kind of flies around. It's not, they don't have to worry about clouds, you know, but of course they're going to be spying on you. It's a big, giant, just looks like this long glider wing, you know, but it's all solar panel, and it'll just stay up there and hold point and surveil. Yay, I feel so much better. Then we have Boeing also is launching space tourism, lifting off in 2015. American space ambitions have, for the most part, maintained a well-defined line between space exploration and space tourism. But that line is now blurred considerably as Boeing announced that it is entering the space tourism business, selling leftover seats in its crew space transportation spacecraft after the initial four are filled by embarking and returning crews bound for the International Space Station. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, we got extra space over here. Give me money. You know, we're going to space. But it looks like government invited themselves. Then we have, you know, the economy. There's so much. This is one good stat. This will help you understand, you know, why I'm so concerned today. The 7 million housing shadow inventory could trigger a price avalanche. And there's a graph here that's interesting to look at. You'll have three lines. One is 30-day delinquency cure rate. Now, what they mean is, let's say you're 31 days late on your house payment. Okay, well, what percentage would make it up? They go, okay, oh, I was late, I didn't have the money, I forgot, I whatever. You know, here, I give it to you. All right, well, in 2005, the cure rate was 85%. You know, they're just like, okay, yeah, I missed a little bit here. You know what it is now? It's down to 28%. If you're late 30 days, only 28% of the people that are late make it up. It's going. It's going fast. Then they go to 60-day delinquency cure rate. It was almost 70% when you went 2 months in 2005. If you were 2 months late, you know, almost 70%, 68 or something percent of them, you know, would cure it. Yeah, you know, whatever problem was, it got all caught up. It's all good. You know what it's at now? It's about 5%. And if you go 90 days delinquent, it's almost 0%. You're 3 months behind, you're not getting caught up. You're not doing it again. You're not, you know, raising the money. I mean, what surprised me was the 30-day delinquency. When it was, you know, 85%, now it's down to 28. What do you think's going to happen? In spite of the huge number of foreclosed homes that have been sold by the banks in Las Vegas area, the volume of new foreclosure actions continues to rise. While many of these defaulted properties throughout the nation will escape foreclosure by means of a short sale, the rest will move on to foreclosure proceedings and eventually trustee sale to a third party or repossession by the lender. Overwhelmed by the number of defaulted properties, banks have stretched out the time between the beginning of mortgage delinquency and formal foreclosure to an incredible average of 469 days, more than 15 months. Since these homeowners in default are living in their houses without making mortgage payments, that is a way to build up a sizable pile of cash. Delinquent homeowners, the number just keeps growing. You could argue that the shadow inventory is the total of repossessed homes not yet on the market and defaulted homes that will move into foreclosure. However, there is also the matter of homes which are seriously delinquent in mortgage payments. Why, you may ask? The homeowner can cure their delinquency by paying the arrears before the home goes in default. The problem is that the cure rate for those seriously delinquent mortgages is almost zero. And you can look at the chart. Housing is going to take another dump. There is no stopping it. We talked about it before on the show. You know, this foreclosure shadow inventory that's sitting out there, there are so many homes just sitting there that haven't been foreclosed on. People are still living in them. Or they haven't allowed them to go to short sale. Or they haven't put them up for sale. And they're just sitting there hoping nobody goes in and take all the copper. This is just waiting to happen. So what does Obama do? He comes out with another program. We're going to help the delinquent homeowners, blah, blah, blah. Instead of just letting the homes go, let the price go down. Let it go down to what it really was. Get rid of the bubble mentality and quit stealing from me to keep propping it up. This is what's coming. We've been screaming about this. There is tons of inventory out there that they haven't even put up yet. J.P. Morgan brings foreclosure case. Court finds bank committed fraud. This is going to have a big impact, too. An interesting development out of Gene Johnson, circuit judge in Duval County, Florida. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be county. Duval County, Florida, where in a case filed by J.P. Morgan WaMu as plaintiff and law firm of Shapiro and Fishman attempted to evict defendants Hank and Marilyn Pocopani. As basis for the legal case, WaMu had submitted an assignment of mortgage, which, however, the court just found never actually belonged to WaMu, and instead was carried on the books of Fannie Mae. Once this was uncovered is where this case gets really interesting. In point, on the books of Fannie Mae, five of the filing we read that the plaintiff predecessor counsel made clerical errors when it represented to the court that the plaintiff was the owner and holder of the note and mortgage rather than the servicer for the owner, which means that only Fannie had the right to foreclose upon the family that was in there. Yet J.P. Morgan, as servicer, decided to take that liberty itself. And here the judge got really angry. The court finds WaMu, with the assistance of its previous counsel, Shapiro and Fishman, submitted the assignment when they knew that only Fannie Mae was entitled to foreclose on the mortgage and that WaMu never owned or held the note of the mortgage. And, oops, the court finds, by clear and convincing evidence, that WaMu, Chase, and Shapiro and Fishman committed fraud on this court. Well, they dismissed it. It's getting really nasty. But what happened is GMAC, General Motors has their own financing group and so on, went all over the country and told all their people to stop foreclosure proceedings and any short sale that they were entering into contract with people that were buying the homes as a short sale to refund their money, their deposits, and stop that too. Why? Because what this did is they went to all these people saying that, well, yeah, we kind of serviced the note and kind of sort of pinky swear almost had kind of what they've been doing here, what a lot of these guys here have been doing here in Arizona. Say, show me the note. Show me the mortgage. Show me who I'm supposed to be paying anyway. You know, who says you are the ones that are able to even foreclose? Well, they made this argument, and what did the court do? We're saying you committed fraud on the court by even saying you had standing to foreclose. Whoa, that put a whoa honkus on it, didn't it? Yeah. I'm telling you, man, there is something. This whole thing is going to come tumbling down, and what's going to be left? Our desire for more government? That's what did it. So I got in an argument last week with this guy. He said, well, they deregulated. I go, no, they didn't. They regulated the fraud. We got to be looking for something else. What else?